It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your one?
Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like that. Never make me think wrong. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
We knew this was going to be a two-part podcast. I don't even know why I speculated at the beginning that it wouldn't be. But if y'all heard part one of the Mark Draft, matter of fact, if you haven't heard part one of the Mark Draft, go back and listen to it right now. Amazing stuff on that podcast. Flames coming out of the mouth of Mark Hicks and your boy Jay Hicks on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. This is part two of the Mark Draft for 2018. This is Saturday, April 7th. And we're picking it up, man, with the sixth pick of the draft. But thank you for listening. Check out the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Go ahead and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We are also on Twitter and Facebook at HHS Report. So go ahead and find us there. Like us, follow us, do whatever you got to do to make sure that you're getting this content, because it's the best content on the internet. Internet's a big place, y'all, but this is number one. I'm telling you right now. So Mark Hicks is our guest with the Mark Draft. Welcome back, Mark. How you feeling?
I'm good.
Yep,
very, very good first half. Let's get into the second.
Man, I'm telling you, man, the first half is absolute flames. And I'll recap the picks, but for those of you who are unaware of the Mark Draft, how it works, Mark tells us what each team picking in the top 10 of the NFL draft should do with that pick, because mock drafts are pointless because they're all based off false information, right? Nobody wants other teams knowing what they're planning to do with their pick, right? So they're deliberately going to misinform the reporters who are putting out the mock drafts. And then other bozos get online and they make their own mock drafts based on these other reporters' mock drafts. And then they know that they need clicks, so then they put other names at the top of the draft that have no business being there, like Josh Allen, right? So that's how you know that mock drafts are garbage. And so Mark tells us in the mock draft what these teams should be doing. And with the first pick, the Cleveland Browns should select Josh Rosen, according to Mark Hicks, followed by Sam Darnold to the Giants at number two, Baker Mayfield to the Jets at number three, Saquon Barkley to the Browns at number four. This is my dream scenario. I'm drooling a little bit on just the notion of having Rosen and Barkley in the same backfield. Josh Allen to the Denver Broncos with the fifth pick. So picking up at number six, the Indianapolis Colts traded down from number three. Mark, what should the Colts and their new GM, Mr. Such and Such, I forget his name. What's his name? Do you remember his name?
I do not remember that guy's name.
I'll get his name. I don't want to disrespect the man. I'll get his name in a second. But what should this guy, who's now running the Indianapolis Colts, do now that Ryan Grigson was fired? Thank the good Lord.
Yeah, and he managed to come here for a season, which
I forgot about that.
I'm not gonna get on.
Is he still on the staff?
I mean, the dude is just terrible.
Is he still on the staff with the Browns? I forgot about that.
I think he finally got fired from us. I want to say that he's gone.
Chris
but
Ballard.
I'm not 100% sure on it.
Chris Ballard is the name of, if you Google Colts GM, and you'll see a picture of Chris Ballard. He looked like he just, I don't know, like he just ate a lemon or something. He's making a funny, making a funny face on that phone. But Chris Ballard is the man's name. So you're Chris Ballard, Mark. What are you doing with that sixth pick after you done potentially swindled the New York Jets into trading half of their draft to get to that spot?
Well, it was definitely a swindle, because the Indianapolis Colts, for all intents and purposes, it really have not done a good job of surrounding Andrew Luck with any type of talent. And defensively, it had been absolutely horrendous. They just kept getting, like, Browns play former Browns players on their roster, and trying to to go out there and go out there and try to win games.
All ex-Cleveland Browns either play for the Colts or the Patriots. It's a known fact.
Without question. So for me, I think this person was in play for Indianapolis at 3. And not only did they get a overhaul for that third pick to drop down 3 spots and still take the guy that they want. And the guy that they want, in my opinion, is Bradley Chubb, the defensive end from NC State. And we mentioned this earlier in part one a little bit. But I like Bradley Chubb's game. In my opinion, Bradley Chubb is the second best player in this draft. And, you know, we talked about this before in the mock draft. If you can't get a quarterback with a top 5 or 6 pick, then you need to either protect the quarterback with a stud left tackle or get somebody who's going to rush the quarterback. And in this case, they're going to rush the quarterback because there's no offensive lineman, in my opinion, that's worth a top 5 pick. So you're going to go ahead and take the best pass rusher on the board, and that's Bradley Chubb.
Now, in part one, I mentioned that, and you agree, that Bradley Chubb's tape, and we love that word tape, right? Quote-unquote tape.
Yes.
That we're all watching on YouTube.
Gotta love the tape.
That we're all watching on YouTube, right? That tape of Bradley Chubb, in my opinion, is better than Myles Garrett's was coming out last year.
Yes, it was.
And you agree with that. Tell me why you think that is.
Because I think in a lot of cases, Myles Garrett may have had, you know, some flashy plays, but I actually watched this game. I watched the game against Florida State that they had early in the NC State had earlier in the season.
Chubb was an animal.
And Bradley Chubb just absolutely dominated that game.
He was an animal,
man,
in that game.
He was an absolute animal. And I it's rare that I see games where a defensive player just, you know, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, to get a couple sacks here and there, but he stuffed plays in the backfield on run plays. He was in the quarterback's face all game long. They tried to double him. They tried to, you know, do different shifts and things on the offensive line to try to, you know, get some bodies on him, and they just could not stop this guy. He lived in the backfield the entire game. And a lot of the big plays that he had, I mean, and one of the things that I criticized Myles Garrett on is that while he made the flashy sack plays and things of that nature, against the run, he didn't have many highlights. And one thing with Bradley Chubb is I noticed he had a lot of tackles for losses. He was in the backfield a lot, and not just in the Florida State game, but in a lot of games, where he influenced the play on offense, regardless of whether or not he actually made the play or not himself. And I think that's where great defensive ends, that's where they get their bread and butter, is when they affect the play on offense, whether they make the actual tackle or not. And I think that's what's cool about having a guy like Chubb. And I can see why somebody like the Browns would actually think about trying to take him at 4. But, I mean, when you have a guy that's supposed to be a can't-miss in Myles Garrett, you don't need a necessarily a Bradley Chubb. You just need somebody who's going to, you know, do the necessary things like Emmanuel Ogba does and make the play that needs to be made. He can go out there and freelance, and the other guy on the other end can actually take care of or be the guy who just makes the actual football play, the best play that's there for the time, whether it's stopping a run or closing it or taking care of the gap, whatever the case may be. And that's a good compliment to Myles Garrett. You really can't have all your defensive ends just rushing the quarterback and leaving things to chance on the back end. So, but for the Colts, I think this will be the perfect scenario. They get the guy that they want. They traded down 3 picks, and they got a whole boatload of picks in return. So that's where I'm going if I'm them.
So I agree with all that. I think Bradley Chubb is his – to me, he looks like a better prospect coming out of school than Myles Garrett. I was highly skeptical of Myles Garrett when he came out last year. I thought he would be a bust in that I thought he was not going to live up to the hype. So far, I would say I'm pretty correct on that. Like, now, Garrett looked good when he was in there, but he was injured, which was part of the knock on him. You know what I mean?
Correct.
That was part of the knock on him coming out, was that he had some injury issues in college, which going back to part one, you know, the Browns, love you to get Saquon Barkley. God never had an injury history. But anyway, that's another. I can't help myself, man. I just have to keep going back to that stuff every now and again. But Bradley Chubb, to me, he excels at all the things that Myles Garrett's not good at. So finishing plays, right? Not taking plays off, having that high motor consistently. Defending the run. Having a variety of moves as a pass rusher. These are things that Myles Garrett didn't have. Myles Garrett is just an overwhelmingly spectacular athlete, and that's what his game is predicated on. Bradley Chubb has a variety of moves. Bradley Chubb has heart that on every play, he's going to give it his all. That play against Florida State when he chased down the quarterback 20 yards down the field and stripped him from behind.
Yes, sir.
That's stuff that is just you just would die for if you're a defensive coordinator or a fan of defense. Like, that's it. Those are the type of plays. When you see him, you know, he's got a variety of moves. He's getting to the quarterback. He's getting to Lamar Jackson and sacking the quarterback, all that type of stuff. Like, Bradley Chubb's, man, I didn't really know about him. And then when I really started doing research on dude, I was like, okay, I get it now. I get it now.
Right.
And if the Browns, I think the most likely scenario is Darnold at one, Chubb at four for the Browns. I think that's the most likely scenario. If that happens,
I agree.
As a Browns fan, I will not be upset because those are two really good players, and it would not be my preference of who they should take, and I would be a little bit hurt that Barkley wasn't coming to Cleveland, but even still, that's a pretty good package, and Bradley Chubb paired with Myles Garrett, I understand why that's appealing. I do, and he comes from a football family, which is great. He's got a brother that's in the league right now. I do understand that Emmanuel Ogbah is still there. They just spent a second-round pick on him a couple of years ago. So if he's healthy and Garrett's healthy, that those are your bookends right there, because Ogbah's been productive when he's been out there. So to me, it's like if you're the Browns picking, that is, you know, you don't really need that that defensive end at that spot. But the Colts absolutely need a defensive end. They've been struggling on defense for years. I can't name two defenders on their team. I think they used to have Vontae Davis. I think he's gone, right?
Yep, he's
Malik
gone
Hooker's
now.
There. So they have Malik Hooker. Outside of Malik Hooker from Ohio State, I couldn't tell you who else is on the defense right now.
Is Mike Adams still there from the former Brown? Is he still there? And I don't even remember if he's still there or not either.
I'm not sure.
I know he was there for a little bit.
I don't think he is. I could be wrong, but.
You're right. I don't know who their defensive players are. Not off the top of my head anyway, so they definitely need a playmaker on
Mike
defense.
Adams, Mike Adams is 37 years old now and plays for the Carolina Panthers.
Jesus, man, you got to be kidding me. Wow.
I'm going to pull up the Colts depth chart. I'm going to just for shits and giggles, right? Let's just see who's on their depth chart defensively real quick, because they absolutely need – I mean, Bradley Chubb, by all accounts, is the best defensive player in the draft. So
without question.
They got Jonathan Hankins from Ohio State. Jabal Sheard is still there. They got Barkevious Mingo. And
that's why they did pick up Mingo.
That's about it. I said Malik Hooker. Malik Hooker's on the team, right?
Yeah.
Why is he not on the depth chart here?
He should be.
He's not. I don't know what the deal with that is.
He tore his ACL, so that's probably why they probably showing that from at the end of the season last year.
Maybe.
But should definitely be on that roster.
Mark, I got to run and put Kai in the bed, so can you hang on a second?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, hold on right quick. Took a podcasting returning after I put my son to bed. So you're going to hear a little bit of a quieter Justin from this point forward, but what's funny about the Colts is I feel like we've been doing the same game for years about, like, name that Colts defender. Like, I feel like this is, like, a thing that we do every single season, and we just don't know who is on defense for the Colts. And so they went Malik Hooker last year. That was a good pick until he got hurt. You add Bradley Chubb, now you're adding pieces.
I mean,
this is what Jacksonville did, right? Like, Jacksonville just slowly started adding pieces, and before you knew it, they had a good defense.
Yeah, exactly. But if they could – if they don't continue to upgrade that offensive line over there and they continually get Andrew Luck killed, it's not going to matter how many defensive players they're going to have, because they're not going to be able to score any damn points anyway.
I'm surprised Quentin Nelson wasn't the pick then.
You would think about it, but they need more help than just a guard. So, I mean, unless they're drafting, you know, like five guys, then I would consider Quentin Nelson, but not for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not now, anyway. Bradley Chubb is a much better prospect, and it's more of a bigger need for that right now. So that's where I would go with. And from a guard standpoint, the guard class is very, very deep in this draft. So they can get a quality guard or two later on in the draft, and they can use some of those picks that the Jets gave up to them to trade up and start, you know, stockpiling those type of players, those offensive linemen that's definitely going to be needed to, you know, protect Andrew Luck going forward. So
7th is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They just gave Mike Evans a ton of money. Jameis Winston is still there. Jameis is still not, I don't think he's quite living up to the hype just yet, but he's still a good football player, but I don't think
he's quality.
Yeah, he's not quite there yet. So
I agree.
What would Tampa do if Mark was running the show there?
If Mark's running the show for Tampa Bay, their biggest need right now is defensive back, and in my particular opinion, their biggest defensive need is at safety. So now, this is the question that you have to ask yourself if you're Tampa Bay. And this is the biggest question of all, if you're going safety, is Minkah Fitzpatrick a safety? And the reason why I ask that question is because, you know, there's been talk about him, you know, you could play him at corner. He's basically a jack of all trades, not really a master of none. So you could actually place him anywhere and he's going to be effective. My biggest question is, if you don't think that Minkah Fitzpatrick is a safety, then Derwin James, the safety from Florida State, is your pick there at 7. I personally think no matter where you place Minkah Fitzpatrick, he's going to excel. So, and he's a guy that one of the few players that I've watched that he really does not have many weaknesses at all. If he has any weaknesses, he's one of those few players that, you know, he excels wherever you play him. So for this particular case in this particular mock draft, I'm taking Minkah Fitzpatrick, the defensive back from Alabama, at 7 for Tampa Bay.
About a month or two ago, Minkah was a slam dunk to be a top 4 pick. Like, a lot of people had him going to Cleveland at 4 in their mocks, but again, we know what those are worth.
Right.
I will say that Tampa did go out and pick up T.J. Ward.
That's so true.
And he's, you know, they got him listed on the depth chart anyway at free safety. So, I mean, I always looked at him as a strong safety. They got him listed as a free safety. I think they have Chris Conte, I believe. Is that who that is? At strong safety. So, I mean, I think, you know, there should be a spot for Minkah between those two guys. I mean, I would think that he would be there over one of those guys.
I agree. I think T.J. Ward, with you, I think T.J. Ward is a strong safety. He's always been in throughout his entire career. So, and Conte is nothing more than just a swing safety where, you know, one of those guys get hurt, he can come in and provide a start or two. But Minkah Fitzpatrick, to me, is a ball hawk. Is the ball hawk free safety, and if you're going to play him at safety, and he's the guy he has very few weaknesses. He can pretty much do everything that you want in a defensive back. And my thing is, if he had to play corner, he could in spurts, but I don't think corner is truly his natural position. I think if you just place him at center field and have him make plays, that's where I think his bread and butter is going forward in the NFL. So that's where I think he needs to be. And if Tampa's going to take him, that's where he needs to play. And then, you know, T.J. Ward can actually play the strong safety, and I think that would be a good combination.
So the thing with Fitzpatrick is that a lot of people have debated whether or not he's going to be safety in the NFL or if he's going to be like a nickel corner. Mm-hmm. I don't think you would take a nickel corner this high in the draft. However,
I agree.
However, couldn't the argument be made that having a lockdown nickel defensive back is a much more desirable player to have on your roster at this point, given that it's a passing league. Everybody's trying to spread it out and throw it. You know, there's always three wide receiver sets on the field. You plug a guy like Minka in there, you know you can play him at safety, or he could drop into a zone or whatever, but you could put him at the nickel and he could play some man-to-man out of that spot. I mean, maybe I guess what I'm saying is maybe it's not too crazy to invest in a corner that you think you could play there, much like Denver did when they had Aqib Talib and Chris Harris, and then they went out and drafted Bradley Roby and stuck him at the nickel, and that turned out to be a great pick. Exactly. So maybe there's an opportunity there for teams to kind of think that way and say, okay, we need to put more emphasis on our secondary. And much like how guys like to have a stable of defensive linemen rotating in to get after the quarterback, you can have a stable of defensive backs. Maybe that's an option there. Or, you know, I guess you could, that always begs the question too, if that's the case, why not Denzel Ward over somebody like Minka Fitzpatrick? But I could say,
my only concern, or my only reason why I would have Minka over Denzel Ward, has nothing to do with, you know, ability. I just think that with Minka's versatility and the ability to play him in multiple areas, I think that intrigues me more than just, you know, getting Denzel Ward, who's just too strictly a corner. You know what I mean? I, you know, there's not a ton of versatility. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that for, you know, his versatility makes him that much more attractive. If I'm the, you know, Tampa, and I can place him at different positions, like you said, you can never have enough defensive backs, especially in the passing lane like this, where it seems like every stiff is throwing for 4,000 yards. You know, you can't have enough defensive backs on the field. So, and especially versatile ones like Minka Fitzpatrick is, so that's why I would take them.
They still running that Tampa 2 in Tampa?
I want to say they do.
Because if that's the case, they could use a ball hawk and safety that can cover a lot of ground, and Minka's got A1 speed back there. So,
correct.
You know, if that's the case, then you know, maybe it works. Number eight, the Chicago Bears are on the clock. They shocked everybody when they traded up to number 2 last year, selected Mitchell Trubisky, Cleveland native out of the University of North Carolina, who ended up starting midseason over Mike Glennon. Mitch Trubisky had, you know, statistically not the best season, but I think he can still be pretty good. Like, I would still be pretty excited if I was a Bears fan. Like, I don't know that he's going to set the world on fire necessarily, but I think that he can still be a good good quarterback and be their franchise guy going forward. What say you for the 8th pick, Mark, if you're running the Chicago Bears?
Well, you just mentioned, you know, with Mitch. Notice we're not calling Mitchell.
Yeah, we refuse to call him Mitchell.
One thing that, you know, you mentioned is that the fact that you made a prize invest, a strong investment in drafting him last year, and with that, you have to protect him. And one of the biggest things is, you know, in his development, is that he has time to throw, and his offensive line, for all intents and purposes, is not very good. Actually, it's kind of horrendous. So, to me, this will be a good spot for a team like Chicago, especially if they're trying to make all these different improvements on offense. You know, they got my boy Allen Robinson. They did some other things as far as getting some more playmakers over there to play with Trubisky. So you need to protect them. So the best offensive lineman in his draft is Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame. That's the guy I would take. And guards is not a sexy pick, but as long as you're keeping your quarterback upright, then it's a great pick. It's an effective pick, and that's what they need to do.
Yeah, you said it, man. Quentin Nelson, by all accounts, is the best offensive lineman in the draft, and a lot of people think he's the most can't-miss guy in the draft, or he's the best player in the draft, or, you know, it seems as though Nelson, Chubb, and Barkley, in some order, seem to be kind of the consensus top three in this draft, even above the quarterbacks. And so to come away with Allen Robinson, they got Taylor Gabriel in the fold now.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and Marquise Wheaton is there in Chicago, so they've picked up some skill position guys. They still have Trubisky, and they still have Jordan Howard and Tariq Coleman. It's a nice little underrated kind of offense there, you know. And the Bears, they played pretty well last year. Like, they shocked some people with how they performed. Like, I think they finished up better than what people expected. They were more competitive. They had some good games. I believe they beat Pittsburgh at home last year. They beat Carolina at home last year. They weren't terrible, man. The Bears were all right. So picking up a guy who is, by most accounts, one of the top three players in the draft at number 8, it's not a bad spot to be in. And that's one of the benefits you get of having your quarterback already solidified. If the Browns had a quarterback, they probably would not have went 0-16, and therefore they probably would not be picking number one. But hypothetically, if you're the Browns and you already have your quarterback solved, you can use one of your top five picks on a skill position guy and not think twice about it because your quarterback is already taken care of. Same thing here with Chicago. Like, they have already invested in Mitch Trubisky. They already invested in Mitch to the point that they feel like they don't need to. I mean, obviously they don't need to get a quarterback, so they can go ahead and put pieces around him because that part is solved. So it's a nice luxury to have when you believe, even if he's not the guy, they think he's the guy, and that's all that matters.
Right.
You can go out and put guys around him, and if you do that correctly, then even if he's not the guy, he can still be pretty decent and effective. And so it's a good situation to be in. So Bears are doing. And even more than that, I like what the 49ers are doing. So they pick 9th. For those of you who don't know, basically the San Francisco 49ers are the team that I dream about the Browns were as a Browns fan, because they were able to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, who we had a lengthy conversation last year in part one of the Mock Draft podcast. We kicked off this year's Mock Draft talking about Hugh Jackson, which is probably why this turned into a two-parter, right?
Right.
And so last year, though, we led off talking about Jimmy G, and you and I kind of disagreed on that. You were pretty much in the camp that, not that he was a bad player, but you didn't want him for the Browns. You wanted the Browns to get their own guy and build him up. I was saying, get him however you can find him. Jimmy G's a terrific prospect. Go ahead and get him. The Browns have ample draft capital to make a deal for a guy like that. They just have to pull the trigger on it. We've heard so many conflicting reports about why Jimmy did not end up in Cleveland. Some people blame Garoppolo. Some people blame the Browns front office. Some people say that there was never a trade on the table. Some people say Belichick still holds a grudge against Cleveland. He wasn't going to trade Jimmy to a place where he knew he couldn't succeed. There's been 1,000 different rumors and speculation as to why he didn't end up there. But what we do know is that he's in San Francisco. He signed a mega contract this offseason after going to San Francisco, sitting out for about a week or two, coming into a middle of a game. I think he threw like 2 touchdowns against Seattle when he came in the fourth quarter. Then he won all his starts after that. Like, regardless of whether or not he would have been a good fit for the Browns, he's a damn good fit for the 49ers. And Jimmy Garoppolo is the real deal. I believe he's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Like, I think he's literally one of the top 12, if not even top 10 quarterbacks in the league right now. I'd put him that high. That's how much I believe in him. I believe he's the guy. I love what San Francisco did to trade back in the draft and still get their guy with Solomon Thomas. They still were able to land Reuben Foster in the draft, who on the field has been great, but he's just had so many off the field issues. You know, we don't know what his future holds. It could be another Alden Smith situation with him, but for the 49ers, but hopefully for their sake, it's not. And hopefully for Reuben Foster's sake, it's not. He needs to get himself together. But when he's been on the field, he's been tremendous, just as I suspected he would be. So you're John Lynch right now. Mark, you have a Super Bowl ring in your safety deposit box, and you're now running the San Francisco 49ers front office. What are you doing with that 9th pick?
I'm looking at, for me, the biggest need that they have, you know, is defense. And most importantly for them, it's their secondary, and I want to improve their corner play. They drafted... I want to pronounce his name right, Akilah Witherspoon last year. And then they put him there, and immediately he was effective in man coverage right off the bat. And then they had, but they lost, I think it was Dante Johnson, who played at the other corner last year. So they have a gaping hole at corner. And for me, they need somebody who, and I hate the term shutdown corner, but they need somebody who is going to shadow the other team's best wide receiver and in hopes of making plays as well. And that person in this particular draft is going to be Denzel Ward from Ohio State. So if I'm John Lynch, you know, I shore up my secondary that way. And most importantly, I add a well-needed playmaker on defense. So that's who I would go with if I was him. And the best thing about Denzel Ward is I saw him a lot because he played at Nordonia High School, which is the same high school my nephew played at. And I've seen him a lot there. His biggest problem, and one thing that I know that he's going to have to change, is that he did a lot of grabbing and holding type of things, or even at Ohio State, that he's going to have to change from a technique standpoint, or he's going to get flagged a lot in the NFL. But other than that, he has the speed, he has the athleticism, and he can do a lot of things that on from a defensive back standpoint that's going to help the 49ers. So that's where I would go if I was them.
Can I just say that if the 49ers did this, I would continue to contemplate turning in my Browns colors for 49ers colors, because I love Denzel Ward too. I love Denzel Ward. I watched Denzel Ward at Ohio State. I can remember just watching him in a game and just texting you and our other cousins and family members. It's like, man, that dude is a baller. Like,
yeah, he is.
Denzel Ward is nice, man. I think he's an excellent corner. I think that he's from the Cleveland area, as you pointed out, but it just reminds me of all the great defensive backs that have come out of Ohio State. And it feels like I've seen some people mock Denzel Ward as high as 4 to Cleveland. And so I don't think that would happen because the Browns, for some reason, are allergic to Ohio State players. But
yes, I agree.
Even still, Ward would be, I think, a tremendous fit no matter where he goes, because I think he's a great player. And it seems as though like his stock could be improving even due to the emergence of Marshon Lattimore, another Cleveland native who was the NFL Defensive Player of the or Rookie of the Year this past year for the New Orleans Saints. Right. So, I mean, it seems like the stars are kind of aligning for Denzel Ward in that regard. Ohio State's been, outside of Virginia Tech, I don't know if there's been a school that's produced more quality defensive backs, maybe even ahead of Virginia Tech. Ohio State, you know, it's a defensive back university, you know what I'm saying? And Denzel Ward
right.
is going to be a fine pick for San Francisco. I'm a little surprised you didn't say Roquan Smith there. I thought you might surprise me a little bit. I know you like Roquan Smith a lot, and I know that...
A lot.
Yeah, and I feel like the Niners, you know, they had all these great linebackers, right? They had Patrick Willis, and then he retired unexpectedly. And then they had Navarro Bowman, and then he got hurt. And then when he went out, Chris Borman came on, and then... Borman, is that his name?
Navarro Bowman?
No. Chris Borland, I think is his name.
Oh, Borland, yeah. Chris Borland, who retired.
Exactly. He retired. He up and retired out the blue. He was about 24 years old. And then Navarro Bowman comes back, but then they ended up letting him walk to Oakland. So now there's kind of a void in the middle of that defense. I thought you were going to go that route, but Denzel Ward's a quality pick, though. And that leads us to the Oakland Raiders, right? Right across the bay for now.
Right.
until they move to that palace in Las Vegas.
Oakland. And this player, actually, I was considering for San Francisco at 9. I just felt that they had a bigger need on the back end of their defense than an actual linebacker. But Oakland definitely needs linebacker help. And most importantly, outside linebacker or inside linebacker or wherever linebacker. So if I was the Oakland eventually Las Vegas Raiders, I'm going to select Roquan Smith from Georgia to play the linebacker for me in Raider Nation, and most importantly with John Gruden's defense going forward. So that's who I would take if I was them.
And Roquan Smith is a guy that you was raving about during the bowl season, just about the amount of talent that guy had. So, I mean, you pair him with Khalil Mack, and that's pretty scary.
It's dangerous, man. He's a typical silver and black type of player anyway. So you just have attitude. The kid runs sideline to sideline. He just makes plays, man. I love that in a linebacker. I wish the Browns had a third top 10 pick. I would love to get Roquan Smith in there on the defense that we have, because our linebackers are okay. None of them stand out. None of them are actual, like, pro bowlers slash playmakers, like guys that, you know, you have to look or check for, or if you're an offensive coordinator. I mean, he's an impact player, man. I think regardless of where he goes, he's going to be an effective player. And the only thing I think that could get in the way of Roquan Smith is Roquan Smith, because I think he has enough talent and just the desire to be an effective football player. I mean, to the point where he could be in multiple Pro Bowls and that type of thing. He has that talent, man. The only person holding him back is him, as I think at this point, because he's that talented of a football player. So that's who I would take. If I'm Oakland, that's who I would take. But you know, I see the sky's the limit for this guy, man. I've seen enough of his games to know that this guy is an actual football player, and I love that about him.
I mean, an interior backer like that can change everything about a defense. He can change the personality. Like, look what Luke Kuechly did for the Panthers.
You know, correct. I mean,
they got him right around the same pick, 8th, 9th pick in the first round, something like that. And mm-hmm. like 5 years later, they're in the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, right. like that, like you get a guy like that and he can flip the switch. I mean, as great as Khalil Mack is, I don't know that he's a leader like that. Roquan Smith right. maybe could be that guy for that defense. And Oakland's looking to bounce back, man. They had a rough go of it last year when people.
A very disappointing year.
Well, yeah, well we called question. That here on hiphopsportsreport.com. We had yes. them, or at least I did anyways, sliding back. I know we have other contributors on the site, but I had them sliding back. And not making the playoffs this past year after everybody pretty much assuming that they would have went to the Super Bowl had Derek Carr not have gotten hurt. And then it's like, and they're bringing back beast mode? Like, you know they're about to, like, well, let's pump your brakes a little bit. Like, you know, people get a little right. too carried away with some of these teams sometimes. And so Oakland, you know, I hope Oakland enjoys them while they're there. Because they don't look like they're going to be there for long.
Right, exactly.
So, to recap the mock draft, the top 10, with the first pick, the Cleveland Browns. If Mark were running the Browns, would select Josh Rosen, quarterback, UCLA. The New York Giants select quarterback Sam Darnold, University of Southern California. Third pick, New York Jets select Baker Mayfield, quarterback, University of Oklahoma. Fourth pick, Cleveland Browns select running back Saquon Barkley, Penn State University. The fifth pick, the Denver Broncos select quarterback. See a theme here? Josh Allen, Wyoming. Sixth pick, Indianapolis Colts select defensive end Bradley Chubb, North Carolina State. Seventh pick, Tampa Bay Buccaneers select safety slash nickelback slash whatever back, Minka Fitzpatrick, Alabama Crimson Tide. Eighth pick, Chicago Bears select guard Quentin Nelson, Notre Dame. Ninth, San Francisco selects defensive back Denzel Ward of Ohio State. Excuse me, the Ohio State University. And with the 10th pick, the Oakland Raiders select linebacker Roquan Smith, Georgia Bulldogs. That's a solid top 10, Mark. I don't think you'd get fired for any of those picks, man. Except for maybe Josh Allen to Denver. That's the only one. But Denver can't fire John Elway. Who's kidding who, right? That can't happen.
Right.
So
that's not happening.
So knowing that, a few things I want to ask you about, because we have some extra time since we split this podcast into two.
Sure.
You don't have Miami or Buffalo or Arizona trading up for a quarterback. Why not?
I think as average as Ryan Tannehill has been for Miami, I don't think they're ready to give up on him quite yet. I think they want to give him one last chance. Because even though he was taken with the 8th pick when he came out of the draft, okay? And they've invested a lot of time in him, and for the most part, he's been okay. He's been nothing to write home about. And you would think that by now he would make that progressive leap. I mean, he's just been steady. He's been okay. He's not, there hasn't been a difference maker. But I also think in his defense, that the fact that they've been changing offensive philosophies and things like that since he's coming to the league. And I think the the wool has been pulled over the eyes of everybody who, you know, who thought Adam Gase was this offensive guru type of guy as well. I think that also plays into it. So I think Miami wants to wait and give this kid one last chance to try to see if they can actually win with him. Buffalo, I think they're going to try their best to do whatever possible to get one of these quarterbacks. I just don't think they have enough ammunition to do it.
Don't they have two first rounders this year?
Yeah, they have 12 and 23 or something, 21, I think it is. 12 and 21 or something like that. But I don't think that's enough.
No, actually, it's 22.
12 and 22. Yeah. Okay. See, I don't think they have enough to get up to get in the top, to get to two. Because that's honestly the only way they're going to get an actual quarterback. I don't see anybody else. Even the Browns. I mean, to go from 12 up to 4, that's a big jump, and that takes a lot. And I don't think Buffalo, as much as they may want to get one of those guys, I don't think they're willing to do all that to get there. But I will say this, though, and this may not come into play. And the same thing with Arizona, too. There's a possibility that they may not move up is because there's a fifth quarterback that we haven't talked about that I think that they'd be willing to go ahead and draft if they stay where they are.
There's two names that I'm thinking about. Well, I don't know which one you're thinking about, but there's two names out there that everybody, I think, would associate with that selection, being either Mason Rudolph of Oklahoma State or Lamar Jackson, the Heisman Trophy winner from Louisville.
And so I'm going with plan B. I'm going with Lamar Jackson. And I think Lamar Jackson not being even considered in the top five is probably a good spot for them. And I love Lamar Jackson. Let me just put that out there. I love Lamar Jackson. I love the fact that he wants to be looked at as a quarterback instead of trying to shift him and move him to a wide receiver. Because, you know, especially with black quarterbacks, they always want to make them the athlete. You know what I mean?
Right.
And not necessarily make him as a quarterback. But he has
In fairness, they do that with white quarterbacks too, but not with the same frequency. I mean, like, they tried to convert Matt Jones and Eric Crouch and some guys, but yeah.
Right. But my thing is with Lamar Jackson, he, from a conventional quarterback standpoint, he can make every single throw. He is a dynamic athlete, here's a stat that I looked at the other day that I wanted to bring up for this mock draft.
So we keep hitting on this about how we're thinking the same way and how we've done this for so long and how we're blood relatives. And if you say the same stat that I heard about Lamar Jackson, I will not be surprised. But go ahead.
So they did a stat on his rushes, okay? And 23%.
That's the same stat.
Of all the runs. Yeah. See what I'm saying? 23% of Lamar Jackson's runs were runs that were actually not scripted runs, which means that 77% of his runs were basically scripted runs, were runs that they designed plays where he had to run the football, which tells me that this is a guy who wants to stay in the pocket and throw the football.
Absolutely.
And my thing is that the biggest problem with Lamar Jackson is his mechanics, because he's just using strictly arm strength, and he's not using his legs, his base, to actually get his throwing motion to throw an accurate football. But as a playmaker, there is no bigger playmaker besides Saquon Barkley in this draft. I mean, like offensive playmaker, there's nobody else that's even close to him.
Right.
And my thing is that he's being overlooked because of the fact that, you know, he's not the conventional 6'5", 235, 40-pound quarterback. He's not that conventional guy. And they automatically look at his athleticism and look at it as a bad thing because he's going to be the type of guy that's going to run all the time. And that's not the case. It's never been the case with him. But I think his goal, if I was a team like Buffalo, I would draft a guy like Lamar Jackson and put him on the bench and have him sit and learn and give and work on his mechanics and do all this. Because he could be a dynamic playmaker for me down the road. Another place that would be would be a good spot for him would be Jacksonville. Put him there behind Blake Bortles. Have him sit there and learn. Rivers over there in San Diego.
If you had to mark him, though, that too. If you had to mark draft him, if you had to mark him, where would you mark him at being? As being the best place for him? Like, if you were running that franchise, you absolutely would not pass on him at that spot.
The best franchise for him, in my opinion, would be would be Jacksonville.
Okay.
Because Blake Bortles, you know, they even though they signed him to an extension, they're still not sold on this guy. And if you put a Lamar Jackson with some of the weapons that they already have, and you get him a couple more playmakers on offense with that defense that they have, they'll be an absolutely dangerous team, man. They will be extremely dangerous.
They were biting their bottom lip when Blake Bortles, signed that extension. The Jacksonville front office was biting that bottom lip like,
without question, right? We got to give this to Blake Bortles. They have no choice because there's a guy got them to an AFC championship game, whether it was by hook or by crook.
Diddy, though?
Right, right. No, he didn't, but he was on the team. So they'd rather give it to him and at least – hopefully find his replacement. So, I mean, if I could peg him somewhere, Jacksonville would be a nice place for him. I think he would do well there. I think he also could do well in, I mean, as much as I was talking about earlier, Baker Mayfield going to New Orleans, I could see him playing in New Orleans too, sitting behind Drew Brees for like a year or two and just getting an idea of that offense and giving an opportunity to learn his mechanic, to work on his mechanics and everything. That would be a good destination for him as well. So, those would be the two spots for him.
Yeah, it looks like New Orleans picks 27th, Jacksonville 29th. So a couple of other housekeeping items I wanted to get to, Mark, before we wrap up the Mark Draft 2018. The New England Patriots, everybody's favorite football team to hate. Which did you hear the story, by the way, that the referees basically started interpreting the new catch rules in the Super Bowl without telling anybody?
Yeah, I heard that.
Like where they like basically came out and said like, yeah, we pretty much were, whatever they changed the rule to for a catch. Now they basically admitted that they were doing that. They were judging catches by the new rule in the Super Bowl, which screwed the Patriots twice because there were two catches that were questionable that probably should not have been considered catches by the letter of the law, but the league basically admitted that they were using the new rule in the Super Bowl before it was legally instituted as policy. Just
how in the world do you test something in the Super Bowl? What kind of nonsense is that? How the hell do you test something? We're going to go ahead and test this new project or this new theory, or in this case, this new rule, and we're going to just test it in the biggest game of the year.
It amazes me how the lengths that the league will go to screw the Patriots, you know, and everybody. And all these chuckleheads out here, these Johnny come latelys to football are all convinced that the league, that the Patriots has the NFL in their back pocket, and that of course they're gonna cheat for the Patriots, they're gonna cheat for Tom Brady, and it's just like, do y'all understand that they suspended Tom Brady for nothing? Like, why is the league in the Patriots' back pocket? Like, if anything, it's the opposite. And then you hear stuff like this after the fact. I digress. The Patriots traded away Brandon Cooks and now have two first rounders, the 23rd pick and the 31st pick. Some are speculating that they will move up for a quarterback. In fact, I even saw it on one of the local Boston radio websites. I think it's Nesson or whatever it is. I think they did a mock draft, which said that the Patriots would use those picks to move up to select Josh Rosen with the third pick, I think it was. Or the second pick. So maybe it was the first pick even. It was a deal with Cleveland. It was one of those top four picks. But anyway, let's put it this way. If the Patriots move up, it'll be for Josh Rosen, I think, if they move up that far, because Rosen's the best quarterback and New England's smart. And so they'll see that. But
right.
But I don't think Belichick wants to move up that far. But what do you see the Patriots doing? Do you think they're going to trade up, or are they going to use those picks to improve their defense and their depth?
Well, they can do one of two things. They could definitely use some defensive help, because they're really lacking on defensive playmakers. However, for all intents and purposes, they do need a successor for TB12, and I don't think that even though the Patriots have what they have as far as picks are concerned, I don't think they have enough to get anywhere near the top five. And
without giving up something for next year,
yeah, I mean they would have to give up a ton, and Belichick is not going to do that.
No, he's not.
So I do think that they are going to take a quarterback with one of those picks, and they may just, you know, package a couple of them and move up just a little bit to get. I could see two particular players that they could actually look at. I could see them looking at Mason Rudolph as one of those guys, and I could also see them taking this person is quietly sneaking up the draft boards too. Nobody's been paying attention to him, but that's Luke Falk. They've been looking at him as well.
I've heard his name.
I could see the Patriots going after one of those two guys. And for somebody who could, you know, as a team that has been able to develop their own QBs, that would not be a bad choice for them to go forward. Because I think Mason Rudolph, of course, from Oklahoma State, you know, he's a guy that can actually, you know, he came from the Big 12, but I think he's a guy that could actually be a long-term answer, a quarterback for some team, at least nothing else, a quality backup. And Luke Falk, like I say, from Washington State, he's been moving up the draft board. Like, for the last couple of weeks, he's been moving up pretty good. And if you look at his stats and look at some of the film that he's done, he's actually a pretty good quarterback. And I would not be surprised. He was a redshirt senior too. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like Josh McDaniels would want a guy like him.
You mean to tell me Brian Hoyer is not the future in New England?
Nah, I don't think so.
Would Brian Hoyer be the future at St. Ignatius if he was there?
No, I don't think so. He's better off. He would be better off at, like, you know, at CVCA where my kids go to school. Wow. He's better off there.
You know, we clown on Brian Hoyer, but he's a Cleveland guy, and he's been the best quarterback the Browns have had since '99 record wise.
And that's sad to say.
So, whatever.
I hate to admit that too. By the way,
it's a fact. It's a fact. It is a stone cold hard fact, or whatever they call it. Coors Light cold hard fact. That's what it is. Shout out to Coors Light. Y'all owe me some money now. The Philadelphia Eagles pick 32nd because of the champs, and that's where the champs pick.
Right.
Any glaring needs for that team? I mean, that team was loaded with depth, and they still put it together and won this year with their backup quarterback.
Yeah, they're loaded, man. I'd be shocked if they, you know, I mean, they don't really need anything. I would assume. I mean, maybe, you know, they could take a look at offensive linemen. You know, Jason Peters, you know, he had his knee injury that he suffered last year, and he's 36. So I could see them looking in the offensive tackle category. I could see them going or somebody like Connor Williams from Texas. They could also use another linebacker probably. But they're stacked, man. They could pretty much go in any direction. I wouldn't kill them for it. Because they have talent just basically across the board. But those would be the two areas, if I was Philadelphia, that I would look at first.
And then, of course, our favorite sons, the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns have a bevy of draft picks, as they do every year, because they always trade back.
Yeah, of course.
They pick 33rd, which is the first pick of the second round, and 35th, which is the third pick of the second round. So the Browns have four of the top 35 picks, the first overall, the fourth overall, and then 32 and 35. No, 33 and 35, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see them going with those picks? Because, I mean, again, so in this mock draft scenario, to recap, you had Josh Rosen and Saquon Barkley, which is my dream scenario of right. draft picks at 1 and 4. So they have their quarterback, they have their playmaking running back. Where would you see them going? Now, this is a place where I personally, under this circumstance, under the, you know, if I was running the team under this scenario, everybody wants to say, you know, you can pass on Saquon Barkley because the running back class is so deep. It's so deep. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Isn't there a second pass rusher that a lot of people have going in the top 10 besides Bradley Chubb? There's this guy out of San Antonio, Marcus Davenport, I believe is his name.
Yep.
There's a Sam Hubbard from Ohio State's an edge rusher. He's projected right. to go high in the second round, I believe. There's a kid from LSU, Arden Key, I think is his name. Like these guys, you know, I mean, there's other guys out there that can rush the passer. So this idea that you can pass on Saquon because you can get Darius Geiser or Ronald Jones in the second round, it's kind of like, well, what makes you think that you can't get Sam Hubbard or Key in the second round? So that would be what I would be looking to do. But I'm curious to hear what your take would be.
For me, they have a third, second round pick also at the end of the third round. I mean, second round,
yep.
right before they start the third round. So, I mean, they have a chance to really get. I mean, when you get first and second round players, these are supposed to be starters for you.
Yes,
they're not supposed to be rotational guys. That's supposed to be guys that you help build your core, your team. These are guys who are supposed to be bona fide starters that's supposed to make plays, cornerstones of your team, exactly. So two of their biggest needs were quarterback and just offensive playmaker, which just happens to be at running back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The drop between Saquon Barkley and any other running back is extremely big. It's huge. So that's why I think they maximized the fourth pick by taking Saquon Barkley at 4. So, and they have the 20-plus year need of quarterback for them as well. So, for the first time since 99, they drafted a quarterback in the top 5 and, most importantly, number 1 overall. So, those two things are taken. So, for me, looking forward, the unexpected retirement of Joe Thomas leaves a gaping hole at left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to try Sean Coleman. They're going to who Joe Thomas has said, you know, he's been working with them ever since basically the season ended to try to get him to play left tackle. But I mean, I'm not 100% sold on that. So with one of those second round picks, I'm looking at an offensive tackle. I have a couple of guys in mind that I really, really like. And then secondly would be a corner for him. What's that?
I said, not the kid from Oklahoma who had the worst combine in history.
Oh, that dude is terrible. he's or I mean, Lando Brown. Yeah, he's absolutely horrible. Yeah. I wouldn't dare take
him. We had the
father.
We don't need the son.
Right, you don't need.
Rest easy. But yeah,
the guy I watch a lot of the combine. Everything I watch some things on him. The guy that really excites me is Brian O'Neill, the tackle out of Pitt. He's a lean guy. He's like almost 6'6", almost 6'7". He's 298 pounds, but he has great feet, man. I watch, and particularly the combine. You know, sometimes you know people get all caught up on the combine, but the combine in particular for me is where I like to watch offensive linemen, and most importantly, those drills to show off their feet and their lateral movement, lateral quickness. So Brian O'Neill is somebody who really intrigues me. And let's just say, for all intents and purposes, that Sean Coleman actually does the job well enough for a year, and they still have Spencer Drango there, and they fill that spot for now. And he gets an opportunity, Brian O'Neill, if they draft him, just to try to develop his body and most importantly, get accustomed or acclimated to the NFL game. I mean, I could see them doing something like that, and he would actually be a good fit. The second thing that they desperately need, the Browns need, would be a corner. Because even though they could go ahead and get, you know, another defensive end, they could probably, in the linebacking core, after Roquan Smith and a couple other guys, I mean, the linebacking department actually dwindles as far as talent is concerned. So, like I said, you can't have enough defensive backs. They went and got Demaryius Randall, and now they're going to move him to free safety and put Jabril Peppers in the actual box safety like he's supposed to be, instead of having him, you know, all the way out to Columbus and trying to, you know, to guard people. Like, what the hell is that?
Still,
you know, Greg Williams. You know what I mean? What the hell is that? So,
and they,
I mean,
and they picked up AJ Gaines too.
Yes, they did. So, I mean, they can't have enough guys. And then they still have, I think it's Howard Wilson, the kid that they drafted last year.
He got hurt.
He got hurt. He never got on the field. So
Towson.
They still have that.
Did he go to Towson or something like that? Or some small school?
Yeah, he went to Houston, I believe. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a guy I would definitely look at that. Look at him too. But, I mean, you can't get enough defensive backs. So, and a corner was definitely something that I would look at. I like a couple of corners. Everybody talks about, you know, Josh Jackson from Iowa being this, you know, this great corner. I don't see it. I personally think he's average at best. So for me, some of the things that I've looked at as far as the combine and everything, the couple guys I really like. I like Jari Alexander from Louisville. I like Isaiah Oliver from Colorado. Those are two that stand out to me. And from the corner standpoint, I think you'll be able to get them high in the second round. I mean, even maybe with that 33rd pick, maybe. And like a Brian O'Neill, you can actually take it like 35. You could also get a pass rusher if you want to at that time. Or maybe even a wide receiver with that third, second round pick. You could actually get somebody like that to help.
I don't think Kirk is going to be around, but if he is, that's a move.
Right.
Or
exactly.
DJ Chark, who I think had the fastest time at the combine from LSU.
Yeah, that would be a great pickup in the second round for the Browns.
Too.
And there's somebody, he'd be an outside guy. And because you, like you said, Juice Landry would be an inside guy, slot guy. And I don't know where, honestly, I don't know where Corey Coleman fits on this team right now. If Josh Gordon comes back and he's on a straight and narrow, and all these other people come back, I don't see where Corey Coleman has a spot on this team.
He fits just fine on the bench. He fits absolutely fine right there. There's a perfect spot for him, keeping that bench warm.
For the real players, huh?
That is exactly where he belongs at this juncture of his career. And I'm not saying that he can't turn it around, but, man, he's pretty much, as a fan, that dude is pretty much dead to me after he dropped that ball against the Steelers. Like, you got to be kidding me. You're a first-round pick.
And I'd be interested to see how he comes back from that, because some people, especially for something like that, that's an emotional, that's a damaging thing to somebody's career. I could see that just changing his career for the negative for the rest of the time he plays. He could actually just be gun shy of catching any football from here on out.
He's gun shy of catching footballs now. I don't see what's so different. I don't mean to rag on the guy, man, but damn. Anyway, well, I'll tell you this, man. If you tell me that the Cleveland Browns walk away with Josh Rosen, Saquon Barkley, Isaiah Oliver, and Sam Hubbard, or offensive tackle to replace Joe Thomas and at the top of the second round, man, I am doing backflips. And I've never done a backflip in my damn life, Mark. I'm doing backflips if that's what they come away with in this draft. That is a grand slam home run for John Dorsey. And, of course, it probably won't play out that way. And, like I said, I would not be devastated if we came away with Sam Darnold and Bradley Chubb, or Sam Darnold and Saquon Barkley, because as I pointed out to you before, a year ago, before those guys came out, after that Rose Bowl game that Penn State and USC put on, if you were to tell any Browns fan that you were going to have Sam Darnold and Saquon Barkley a year later, Browns fans would be doing cartwheels up and down East 9th,
right?
All the way to the lake.
That's right.
So, you know, I mean, I think that there's I trust John Dorsey as a football man, and it's hard to, I think, mess up this draft given the positions that the Browns are picking from and given the work that they've done in free agency already. I think that the future's bright. It sounds crazy, but I think the future is bright in Cleveland. Go ahead.
I do want to say real quick, because, Sashi Brown is getting raked over the coals for all of this. I honestly think the only reason why he doesn't have a job today is because he never stabilize the quarterback position. Because I think had he stabilized the quarterback position, I think he would still have a job. In spite of all the other crap that he had. Right, exactly.
He was handicapped by Hugh Jackson, who said that Robert Griffin was the man, who said that Cody Kessler was the man. He said, trust me on Cody Kessler. Robert Griffin had this great workout. He went ahead and did nothing with those guys. And then there's DeShone Kizer, and he completely mismanaged Kizer. Sashi probably wants to catch Hugh in the street right about now.
Yeah, he want to lay hands on him, and not from a biblical sense either.
He wants
to put a couple of knuckles in his grill because he set him up. Threw him under the bus. I mean, he's got RTA and Metro tattooed and Greyhound tattooed all over his ass because he basically just ran completely under the bus, man. It's not cool because, honestly, the plan for the most part worked. The problem was we have an impatient owner and we had a coach that basically sabotaged him from the inside out. And he never got the chance to see it through. It's almost like the Sam Hinkie thing with the Philadelphia 76ers. Mm-hmm. Like Hinkie will never get credit for the team that's out there now, but he was so instrumental in doing that. And maybe in retrospect, in hindsight being 2020, that Sashi shouldn't have broke it down all the way to the studs like he did, because young teams like that don't win.
No,
I mean he really broke it down to the studs. But at the same time, it was a necessary evil because you keep regurgitating high-priced free agents, and you're not getting bang for your buck, so you might as well get somebody young. If you're going to get the same production, you might as well go younger, right? That's just the way it makes perfect sense. But I blame Jimmy Haslam for hiring a non-football guy to run his football operations. That just makes absolutely no sense.
Well, it didn't.
And analytics is not a bad thing because every team uses it, but it just magnifies because it's the Browns and the fact that they just never got their quarterback and they passed up on Carson Wentz and they passed up on Deshaun Watson, and that's come back to bite Sashi in the ass, and pretty much that's why he doesn't have a job today.
Yeah, I don't want to go down a road where we're giving Sam Hinkie a ton of credit. Or Sashi Brown. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I've never been a Hinkie guy, and there's like a lot of Hinkie, quote unquote, Hinkie truthers and Sashi truthers out there, and I just don't buy it. I don't think Sam Hinkie. But I do think it's more necessary in football. In basketball to do what the Sixers did than to do what the Browns did in football, because you see teams turning around in football all the time. In one season, two seasons, you turn it around. The Browns are on
right.
Year 18 of this rebuild, or year 19, and not a stitch of damn progress has been made. In fact, we've gone backwards. So, that it didn't need to be done this way. But having said that, there are a lot of nice pieces on the table and a lot of potential opportunity to bring in some blue chippers to Cleveland, which they desperately need. We're going to have to leave it there for part two of the Mark Draft. Fantastic stuff, Mark. Thanks for joining us again. Thank you for your time on this Saturday evening. We will do our best to get these podcasts out as soon as possible. Just been full of knowledge, man, about the NFL draft, about some of these prospects that you know of and that you've been lied to about, and other prospects who have been working the PR machine, and another prospects who you might not have heard of that Mark dropped on part two of the podcast. So we thank you for your expertise, Mark, and we thank y'all for listening to the Hip Hop Sports Bar podcast. We're going to be back real soon, hopefully for an NBA playoff preview. And a lot of stuff going on in the world of hip hop. Cardi B's dropping. You know what I'm saying? We had the Grammys come and go. We got Drake putting out music. All kinds of stuff, y'all. So stay tuned. HHSR is where it's at. Shout out to all of our followers, all of our listeners out there. Be sure to like the podcast and subscribe to it. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook, y'all. We out of here. Peace.
All of you reporters made it hard on us.